yet, and then we're ready to hear from council.
May I please the court? My name is Heather Barnes, and I represent Jeffrey Wells, who is appealing his conviction for reckless driving. May I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
3 minutes, yes, ma'am.
Is the court familiar with the facts?
Yes.
So, case law in Virginia in the Commonwealth has long held that the Commonwealth must introduce evidence to show that radars have been properly set up and recently tested for accuracy.
Let me stop you there. Is that a prerequisite to the admission of the evidence where there's no objection raised to the admission of the evidence?
I believe so. Judge Benton states it well in his dissent in the Gray case.
How about giving me a majority opinion? That'll help me more.
Well, I believe just that his language, because he's citing Besser v. Town Holland, which I believe is good language, but just simply his summary of it indicates that the burden is on the Commonwealth when they undertake to get this conviction in order to show both of these things. In this case, because the language used by the Commonwealth witness simply that it was working properly, I don't believe there's anything that the defense would be
I tend to agree with you that had you challenged the foundation, the Commonwealth's failure to lay a foundation to establish the reliability of the radar, you would have been correct. But it seems to me that by failing to object to the admission of the evidence, it's properly before the court when the court considers a motion to strike. I'll read you from Banks versus Commonwealth. An objection to the admissibility of evidence must be made when the evidence is presented. The objection comes too late if the objecting party remains silent during its presentation and brings the matter to the court's attention by motion to strike. And it looks to me like that's what you've got here.
Yes, I understand that. However, my argument is based on the distinction between the two prongs of what's required under Royals, which is the first part wherein that it's properly set up, is working properly, and versus the second part where it's recently tested for accuracy. The Commonwealth's witness presented no evidence regarding that distinction. And so I believe the statement that it's...
Well, let me stop you there. In Royals, there was an objection to the admissibility of the radar test. That was an assignment of error, that the evidence of the reading of the speedometer of the radar machine was inadmissible because the Commonwealth had failed to prove that it's properly tested. So there was a challenge in Royals, but there's no challenge here.
To the admissibility of the
radar. So even the statute that the General Assembly just recently enacted, in appeals when a challenge to the conviction rests on a claim that the evidence was insufficient because the trial court improperly admitted evidence, the reviewing court shall consider all evidence admitted at trial to determine whether it's sufficient to sustain a conviction. That's 19.2.324.1.
Yes, and I think that although generally in cases of sufficiency of the evidence, when it's looked for, all inferences are given to the Commonwealth and there is, any evidence to support the judge's decision, that there is a distinction in the case law in these radar cases giving the burden on the Commonwealth to prove these additional matters, which are not specifically elements of the statutes. And that, and for instance, in Crosby, which was 204 Virginia 266 from 1963, the Attorney General argued that once they presented evidence that the radar was functioning, that the statute presumed that it's correct. However, in that case, the Supreme Court held that conflicted with the holding in Royals, and that the statute only provided for the radar to be accepted as prima facie evidence of speed, but the burden of showing the accuracy was on the Commonwealth when it assumed seeking the conviction. And so that's the basis of our argument, is that the burden here was on the Commonwealth to present that evidence in the case.
So what you're suggesting is that in any time that the Commonwealth wants to prove a speed by radar case, that the Commonwealth must by prerequisite offer its evidence, proof of the accuracy of the radar device.
Yes, that's correct.
But again, in Crosby, there was a challenge to the admissibility.
Yes, and again, the distinction between those cases and our case comes in the nature of what the Commonwealth's evidence was. In those cases, there had been testimony by the officers about what they had done in order to set it up and to establish the accuracy. They actually described the tests and the procedures they went through. In this case, the Commonwealth witness failed to provide any of that information. And my argument, as I laid out in my brief, was that requiring the defense then to object on foundation or to cross-examine regarding that shifts the burden by creating, by forcing the defense to create the opportunity for the Commonwealth's witnesses to fix the
holes. But even the statute, even 46.2882, says in any court or legal proceeding in which any question arises about the calibration or accuracy. Here, no question arose because nobody said, I object.
Well, that's what Judge Conway found, that no question arose. However, I believe the question did arise. First, when the defendant pleads not guilty, a question regarding the Commonwealth's case has arisen. The Commonwealth is obligated to prove all the elements and by the manner prescribed by the statute and the case law, which requires them to prove these two additional things.
But even in the context of when the defendant pleads not guilty to an offense, it is still the burden of the defendant to object to inadmissible or what it believes to be inadmissible evidence or testimony, isn't it?
Yes, it is. However, like I said, I don't believe the statement that the radar was working properly is inadmissible, simply inadequate to meet their burden, that it goes at most to the first prong of that two-prong test in Royals and not to the second prong about the recent test for accuracy. And my other argument regarding the question arising would that a question did arise. Based on the defendant's testimony, that Mr. Wells testified that he had been going as slow as 45 miles an hour prior to then speeding up when he came into contact with Trooper Napier. The discrepancy or the difference between the 45 miles an hour he had been going versus the 94 miles an hour that the trooper clocked him at, I believe, does create a question.
Let me pose a hypothetical and maybe take it out of the context of a speeding, a radar speeding case. The code sets up a procedure that the Commonwealth must comply with in order to introduce a certificate of analysis for drugs. Mm-hmm. It has to be properly signed and attested to by the chemist, has to be filed in the circuit court, the trial court, I think it's 7 days prior to trial. Suppose the Commonwealth fails and neglects to do that. Suppose the certificate is not properly attested and it's not properly filed with the court beforehand. But when the Commonwealth offers it into evidence, there's no objection by the defense attorney. Can you then challenge the sufficiency of the evidence that it was in fact a controlled substance in a motion to strike?
In my experience, no, I believe you would have to object to the admissibility of it, given the nature.
Okay, now, why is that hypothetical any different from what we have before us in terms of the law of admissibility versus sufficiency?
Well, for instance, in this case, it is a hearsay exception, basically allowing the Commonwealth to present a calibration certificate or other in order to avoid having to bring in the witnesses who might have done the calibration.
And the same is true of a certificate of analysis for drugs. It's a hearsay exception, so you don't have to bring in the chemist.
Yes, but in this case, they didn't present that evidence. There was none of that evidence presented in order for it to be objected to.
But and the same is true in my hypothetical.
Well, no, in your hypothetical, they put in the certificate of analysis and the defense didn't object. In this case, the Commonwealth presented no evidence regarding the accuracy of the radar, so there was nothing for the defense to object to. And as I've indicated, I believe that improperly shifts the burden to the defense in order to force them to either object on lack of foundation, which is something that then the Commonwealth's witnesses could fill in the holes in, or to cross-examine them, which again creates the opportunity for the Commonwealth to get that evidence in when they fail to present it.
Isn't the position that you're articulating basically suggesting that we rewrite the statute to say, in essence, no person shall be convicted of speeding by way of radar device unless and until the certificate of radar accuracy is presented into evidence by the government?
No, I don't believe that's necessary, but I believe the case law is clear that there are multiple ways that the Commonwealth can choose to prove the accuracy of radar calibration. I think that's been well established, and that the certificate of calibration, I believe that was in the Gray case, that there's the tuning forks or there was a different method that the police officer used in order to establish the accuracy of the radar. And so I think it's clear that they can use multiple means in order to prove that, but they have to prove something. And so that is our argument, that it is on the obligation of them to present that evidence in their case in chief without the defense having to you know, object or ask questions about it. That's their burden. If there are no further questions, may I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. For the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Susan Bounder, and for the Commonwealth. Your Honors, this case is before you on a sufficiency issue of whether there was any evidence to establish that the radar was set up properly and recently tested for accuracy. And I submit to you that Trooper Napier saying it was working properly covers both those issues. Certainly saying something working properly, the reasonable, the reasonable implication of that is that it's both been set up properly and that it's working accurately. And therefore, that was sufficient unless the calibration, unless the radar accuracy or setup was challenged, which it was not. There is no burden shifting in this matter because the code section that allows for the entry of calibration reports creates no burden. It merely takes care of a hearsay problem. And in fact, in taking care of that hearsay problem, it sets up a prerequisite for when you can put in those calibration reports. There must be a challenge to the accuracy. If they'd in fact been entered without that challenge, it would have been hearsay because it wouldn't have satisfied the statute. All the elements of reckless driving were met in this case, and there was simply no question of it. As far as the defendant's testimony that he had been going as low as 45, the defendant testified that at the time he was pulled over, he had sped up to get away from other cars that were driving erratically, slowing down and speeding up, and that he had no idea how fast he was going. That does not challenge the accuracy of the speed at all. Are there any questions? I am going to affirm. Thank you.
Ms. Barnes, do you have any time?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the Attorney General's argument about not raising a question, just may also point out that although all reasonable inferences, the Commonwealth generally is the standard in abuse of discretion case, I don't believe that applies to the question of whether a question arose in this case, because that is because the reasonable inferences only applies to the sufficiency evaluation afterwards, not to whether a question arose during trial. And as I previously stated, that I believe pleading guilty creates that question. Also, I don't believe that it would create surplusage or create it, turn it into hearsay when that challenge hasn't been made. That exception was placed into the law, I believe, after the Bester v. Town of Holland case. And the whole purpose of it was to to solve that evidentiary problem. But I believe the language about cases in which a question arose is not controlling language in the sense that it means that it won't happen. I believe it's just saying that in any case in which speed is an issue, in which this situation has arisen, that this hearsay exception applies. I don't believe that then changes it back into hearsay when a physical question hasn't been asked. I don't believe that they're using the term question in the sense that the defense has to ask a question about this. I believe it's question in the terms of issue. And I believe an issue regarding the speed and speedometer and the radar calibration is an issue in this case. It was certainly made an issue by the previous case law, which places the burden on the Commonwealth, and by Mr. Wells' testimony, and by the motions to strike in this case.
Very well. Thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel and then bring up the Wolf case.
All rise.